Hi, my name is Neeraj and I work with Microsoft SQL Server support team. In this presentation, we will look at partition tables and how can we use them. The topics we will cover are what are partition tables and its benefits, the building blocks of the partitioning tables, the partition table operations, the sliding window demo, and table partitioning best practices. So what is a partition table? At a very basic level, a partition table can be thought of as a single table with multiple parts spread across one or more file groups on a database. Having its data distributed over multiple file groups over possibly multiple disks can inherently improve I/O performance. Typically, one chooses or designs a partition table when it is expected to grow very large. Having chosen to partition a large table can provide several benefits while managing these large sets of table data. Partition table can be designed to store historical data in different partitions, thus presenting a separation of more recent data, which is likely to be used more often than older data, which may be used by ad hoc or reporting queries. This allows easier management of data while also improving the overall performance of properly filtered queries using partition elimination. SQL Server provides some very simple constructs using which one could split existing partitions, merge existing partitions, switch in and out partitions, assign new file groups. Since these management operations are performed at a partition level, they allow means through which one can achieve very fast data deletion and data load of a partition. A large table spread across several file groups provides the flexibility for piecemeal backup or restore of data by partitions. Index maintenance on the table is costly or time-consuming and could benefit from re-indexing partitions of the table rather than the whole table at once. In general, any large table that has maintenance costs exceeding its requirements or that is not performing as expected due to its size might be a candidate for table partitioning. We will look at the building blocks and their relationship with each other using which you can design and create a partition table. The building blocks include the following objects: partition key, partition function, partition scheme, and partition table itself or the partition index. And the operations one can perform over partition tables include splitting a partition, merging a partition, and switching a partition. So let's look at the first object. Choosing the right partition key or partition column is the first step you will take when commencing to design partition table. The partition column stores the values upon which you want to partition the table. The partition column choice is critical because after you've partitioned a table, choosing a different partition column will require recreating the table, reloading all of the data, and rebuilding all of the indexes. Some important things to note about the partition column. The partition column must be a single column in the table, either a single column or a computed column. If you have a combination of columns that form the best partition column, you can add a persisted computed column to the table that combines the values of the original columns and then partition on it. Again, queries need to reference the computed column in their filters in order to take advantage of partition elimination. All data types that are valid for use as index columns can be used as a partitioning column except timestamp. The endtext, text, image, XML, varchar max, nvarchar max, where binary max data types cannot be specified. Also, Microsoft .NET Framework Common Language Runtime or CLR user defined type and alias data type columns cannot be specified. In a cluster table, the partition column must be part of either the primary key or the clustered index. The partitioning column should reflect the best way to subdivide the target table. You should look for relatively balanced distribution of data across the resulting partitions. You should also try to choose a partitioned column that will be used as a filter criterion in most of the queries run against the table. This enables partition elimination, where the query processor can eliminate inapplicable partitions from the query plan and just access the partitions implied by the filter on the queries. You can use the data type of partitioning column when defining the partition function. So effectively, you must choose the partition column before defining the partition function. After you have identified the table to partition and the partition column key, you can proceed with creating a partition function. A partition function specifies how the table or index is partitioned. The partition function maps the domain into a set of partitions. It defines the boundary values of the initial set of partitions and the data type of the partition column. It makes no reference to any tables or disk storage. It forms the basis for one or more partition schemes. In the above create partition function, notice that we didn't specify a column name here, just a data type, date time. Partition functions can be used on multiple tables. The create partition function defines the partition type, the alignment of partitions, whether they will be left or right aligned, and the boundaries for each of the partitions. In the above example, we have a function defined on type date time, which right aligns the boundary point in the intervals. Let's take a look at the partition function range direction, taking the same example to see how intervals are aligned when specifying left or right. In the range left example, with values defined as 0, 10, 20, the result for this range left assignment is partition 1 will have values from the data type of a minimum value to greater than or equal to 0. Partition 2 will have values greater than 1 and less than or equal to 10. Partition 3 will have values greater than 10 and less than or equal to 20. Partition 4 will have values greater than 20 and less than or equal to the data type maximum. Each boundary value falls into the partition on its left as the maximum upper value for that partition. In other words, the three boundary values serve as the upper boundaries of the leftmost three partitions out of the total of four. In the range right example, where boundary values are the same, the result for this range right assignment is the boundary values fall into each partition on the right. Each boundary value becomes the minimum value for that partition. The result with boundary values is a minimum. Now the boundary values fall into each partition on the right. Each boundary value becomes the minimum value for that partition. The result with boundary values is partition 1 will have values from the data type minimum to less than 0. Partition 2 will have values greater than or equal to 0 and less than 10. Partition 3 will have values greater than or equal to 10 and less than 20. Partition 4 will have values greater than 20. Partition 4 will have values greater than or equal to 20 and less than or equal to the data type maximum. Thus, one needs to consider the implication of where the boundary values will fall, and especially so with date time values. Once you have created a partition function, you must associate it with a partition scheme to direct the partitions to specific file groups. The partition scheme maps particular partitions to file groups. A given partition scheme can be used for one or more partition tables. In the above case, the annual min file group will hold the first partition with data prior to and including 2001, file group annual 2002 file group will contain the partition holding the data for year 2002. File group annual 2003 FG will contain the partition holding the data for the year 2003, and so on. When you define a partition scheme, it is better to make sure to name a file group for every partition, even if multiple partitions will reside on the same file group. The create partition scheme syntax also allows one to use the all keyword if you wish to assign all partitions to a single file group. Having chosen a partitioning column and having created a partition function and a partition scheme, we are now ready to create a partition table. Notice that in the create syntax, we refer to the partition scheme defined earlier. In this example, both the table and the index will be partitioned using the same partition function and will use the file group layout as defined in the partition scheme defined earlier. Let's take a quick look at the partitioning table components and their relationship. The partition function, partition scheme, partition table or index form a dependency tree with the partition function at the top. The partition scheme depending on the partition function, and then the partition table or index depending on being linked to a particular partition scheme. The above figure also shows the order of creation as well as the cardinality relationship between the components. In sum, the partition function defines the boundary values of the initial set of partitions and the data type of the partition column. It makes no reference to any tables or disk storage. It forms the basis for one or more partition schemes. The partition scheme maps particular partitions to file groups. A given partition scheme can be used for one or more partition tables, indexes, or index views. The partition table or index is tied to particular partition scheme when it is created. The partition table has only an indirect relationship through the partition scheme to the partition function. Having looked at partitioning table components, we will now look at the partitioning table operations. Partition functions are not static. They can change over time, and their changes propagate through the partition scheme to the partition table or index. You can alter a partition function to change the boundary value list one value at a time, a method that makes it possible to add or remove new partitions. You cannot change the partition function's data type or range direction, though just the boundary values. In this section, we look at the split option by itself. You can add a single boundary value using the split clause of alter partition function. The new boundary value must be in the allowed range and distinct from the existing boundary values. Adding a boundary value has the effect of splitting the table partition that the new boundary value falls in. You add the new boundary value using the split keyword in alterPartition function. The new boundary value obeys the range direction specified in createPartition function. The alterPartition function split and merge options can reference variables or functions as boundary values as long as they resolve to a constant of the same data type as the input parameter. If the partition function is used by partition table and the split results in partitions where both will contain data, SQL Server will move data to the new partition. This data movement will cause transaction log growth due to inserts and deletes. Let us now take an example where we create a left partition table with values 1, 100 and 1000. Here the boundaries range from the minimum of the data type to a value of 1. The second partition will have values ranging from 2 to 100. The third partition will have values ranging from 101 to 1000. And the last partition will have values ranging from 1001 to the maximum of the data type. The alterPartition function command will split or create a new partition with boundary value of 500, and the new alignments will now be the minimum of the data type to a value of 1. The second partition will have a value of 2 to 100. The third partition will have values ranging from 101 to a value of 500. The fourth partition will have values ranging from 501 to 1000. And the last partition will have values ranging from 1001 to the maximum of the data type. When you add a partition by default, SQL Server will use a file group that has been marked as next used. Therefore, to coordinate partitions with file groups, it is critical to know which file group you have designated as the next used, which is to be done before you split the partitions using the alterPartition scheme command. If data is moved into the new partition, this operation may be resource intensive. In this section, we look at the merge option by itself. You can remove a single boundary value using merge. Removing a boundary value has the effect of merging two neighboring partitions into a single new partition. Removing a boundary value reduces the total number of boundary values by one, and therefore the number of partitions by one also. AlterPartition function merge range is the syntax used for merging. Merging basically drops a partition and moves data to the merged partition. It affects all objects using the partition function. At the end of a merge, two partitions are logically fused into one. The drop partition is the one containing the boundary point. To the right of the boundary, if range right. To the left of the boundary, if range left. Data that resides in the dropped range is moved from the dropped partition to the surviving partition. Let us now take an example of the merge operation. Suppose you remove the boundary value of 10 in a partition function which is right aligned and has the current values of 0, 10, 15 and 20 with the following partitions. Partition 1 having minimum of the data type to a value of 1, partition 2 having value of 0 to 9, partition 3 having a value of 10 to 14, and so on and so forth. The following command will remove the partition with lower boundary value of 10, which is alterPartition function, the function name in this case, merge range value of 10. Once the merge operation completes, the resulting partitions will be a minimum value of the data type to a value of 1 in the first partition, The second partition will have 0 to a value of 14. Third partition will have the values from 15 to 19, and the last partition will now have values ranging from 20 to the maximum of the data type. Basically, we now have four partitions because the boundary value for partition 3 was removed. The old partitions 4 and 5 get renumbered as partitions 3 and 4 respectively. This will be one of the more important points when talking about partitioning tables. Both split and merge have effects that follow through to all the partition functions, partition schemes, and the partition tables. If you use split to divide an empty partition into two partitions, split will be a metadata only operation and you will avoid data movement. Similarly, if you use merge to combine two partitions, the merge operation will also avoid the data movement. However, if you're using split or merge with non-empty partitions, data movement will occur. For example, a merge operation on two non-empty partitions will cause the data from the one partition to be inserted into the remaining partition and then deleted from the old partition. The resulting data movement will cause the transaction log to grow. Let's now take a look at partitioning switching. If a partition table uses partition function, the split and the merge operations on the partition function cause SQL Server to redistribute relevant table data among non-empty partitions involved. For the split operation, partition data and indexes are redistributed between an existing partition and a new one. For the merge, the data and indexes are consolidated from two partitions into the remaining one. For a partition table with significant amount of data, this movement of data can be costly and time consuming. To avoid data movement, SQL Server provides a switch option on the alter table statement. The switch operation allows you to manipulate the partition table so that the split and merge will only operate on non-empty partitions, resulting in metadata only operations. Resulting split and merge operations then become simply metadata operations and occur instantly. The switch statement itself is a metadata only operation, so it also happens almost immediately. The switch option is the key feature of table partitioning that makes management of large tables much more feasible. You can use the switch option to take a partition's data and aligned indexes out of the partitioned table in order to manipulate the data and then put it back in without affecting the partitioned table. Let us now take a look at the requirements for a successful switch operation. To use the switch option, at least one of the two tables involved must be partitioned using a partition scheme. It's common to refer to the standalone non-partitioned table as a staging table. There are essentially three ways to use the switch option: switch from a partition of a partition table to a non-empty partition staging table. In this case, you alter the partition table. Switch from a staging table to an empty partition of the partition table. In this case, you alter the staging table. Switch a partition from one partition table to an non-empty partition in another partition table. For this option, you alter the source partition table, that is the partition table that has the data you want to move. There are numerous requirements for the switch command. For example, the switch tables must have the same column structure and indexes, even the same foreign key constraints. All the tables must exist and the destination table or partition must be empty. If you're switching between two partition tables, the partitions must use the same partitioned column. Finally, the source and the targets of the switch must exist on the same file group. Being on the same file group and in the same database, the switch operation can avoid any data movement. There are also some important requirements for indexes during switch operations. All indexes must be aligned. No foreign keys can reference the partition table. We will now take a look at the sliding window demo. There are a number of things you can do to make the sliding window scenario as efficient as possible. The key points will be to minimize the data movement by using split and merge on empty partitions. Another point would be to create the staging table for new data as initially a heap, then load the data, and then build the indexes as a preparation for switching. Another key point to remember is to update statistics on the table after every partition switching cycle. In a sliding window scenario, basically the oldest data is switched out of the partition and it is archived or deleted depending on the business requirements. We will deal with an archiving scenario in the next section. Before I go ahead and show you the commands which we will eventually use to demonstrate the sliding window scenario, let's take a look at the pictorial depiction of this sliding window here so that we are able to follow the steps. In this demo, we intend to create two partitioned tables defined on date partitioned column with transaction history table initially having 5 partitions storing monthly data. As shown above, the first partition designated for data is before Jan of 2011, which is empty. The next 3 partitions have data and the last partition for April is empty as well. The other partition table, transaction history archive, has 2 partitions initially, of which both are empty as depicted above. To demonstrate the sliding window example, we intend to first extend or split the last partitions of both the tables. Since the partitions are currently empty, adding new partition will not involve any data movement. Having added the new partitions to transaction history table and the transaction history archive table, we need to move or switch the current oldest partition from transaction history table, which is the second partition holding data for the month of Jan, to the destination table, which is transaction history archive table's second partition, which is designated to contain data for the month of Jan. After we switch the partition out, we can then remove or merge the first partitions from the individual partition tables. So now let's see the demo. Alright, so now let's take a look at the commands that we will execute to demonstrate the sliding window example. To begin with, we will create a partition function for the transaction history table. It will have 4 partitions based on the months Jan, Feb, and March from 2011. Having created the partition function, we will then create a partition scheme for this specific function that we've just created. And in this case, we are choosing to define just the primary file group. Let's now go ahead and create the transaction history table itself. As you will notice, the transaction history table has in its definition the transaction partition schema that we had earlier created, and in the same definition we've also specified the partitioning key or the partitioning column on which we have chosen to partition this table. Let's go ahead and create the primary key and a non-clustered index. We will now insert data into the transaction history table, and we've chosen to populate data for the month of Jan, for the month of Feb, and for the month of March. Basically, we've inserted 5 records each in the 3 partitions. Let's take a quick look at how the partition table itself looks currently. The query itself is returning us partition IDs where there is data. Since there are currently only 3 partitions having data in them, this query result does not show us the partition ID 1 and partition ID 5, but they're obviously there in the table. Let's also take a look at the partition numbers, the partition numbers and the respective data in them. So we've got partition number or partition ID 2, partition ID 3 and 4 having 5 rows each. This query here also displays the index defined on this, the partition index defined on this on the same scheme and the function. Alright, having created the source table, which is the transaction history, we will now need to create the other partition table, which is the transaction archive table. And for that, we are creating separate functions and schemes. So let's go ahead and create the function first. Currently, the function has only one boundary value, and we define the partition scheme for this specific function using the primary file group to keep things uncomplicated. We will now create the transaction history archive table, which again in the definition mentions the partition scheme that we had just created and also the partition key or the partition column. Let's go ahead and create the primary key and the non-clustered index. Let's take a quick look at the contents of these two tables. So using this query, we're basically looking at a transaction history table which has data in partition ID 2, 3 and 4, whereas the transaction history archive table that we just created currently has 2 partitions but does not have any data as yet. Alright, so the next step would basically involve starting with the sliding scenario. To do that, we will first need to assign the next file group for the partition that we intend to add. So for example, we will now run this command which will assign the primary file group as the next used file group for this function, or rather for this partition scheme. Next, we will use the alter partition function command to add the partition for the month of May. Having done that, we can then move on to extending the partitions in the archive, the transaction history archive table. So we follow the same steps. We assign the primary file group for the transaction archive partition scheme using this command. Having assigned the file group, we would then split or add the new partition to this transaction archive function. Here we basically we've added a new partition for the month of Feb. Alright, so before we eventually use the switch command and move the partition for the Jan month from the transaction history to the transaction history archive table, we need to define a constraint on the source table, which is the transaction history table. We need to define a constraint specifying that this table has data greater than or equal to the values starting from Jan 1st. Having added this constraint, you can then use the actual switch operation using the alter table command, as you can see over here. So in this command, we are running the alter table against the source table. We specify the source partition. Partition 2 contains the data from Jan, and we also specify the destination table over here and the partition into which we intend to move the data. So let's go ahead and execute this command. All right. Having moved the data from the transaction history to transaction history archive partition 2, we now need to remove the oldest partitions from the transaction history and the transaction history archive. To do that, we basically use the merge keyword from the alter partition function. Here we basically specify the boundary value of Jan so that all of the so that the partition from December 2010 collapses or is removed. We do execute the same command, a similar command rather, for the transaction archive partition function. Here too we specify the boundary value of Jan so that the partition containing data from December 2010 is removed. We also go back and remove the constraint that we had earlier added just before we completed the sliding scenario steps. So having moved the data and having removed the oldest partitions, let's take a look at how the data currently looks. So as you will notice, we've now got the partition numbers 2, 3 containing data. The transaction history has data for the month of Feb and it has the data for the month of March. The data for the month of Jan has basically moved to the transaction history archive table, which we can confirm by looking the query against the transaction history archive. The partition ID number 1 now contains data, the 5 rows from the month of Jan. Alright, so that ends the sliding demo example over here. Let's go back to the PowerPoint presentation. Alright, I hope that sliding window demo was useful. Let's now proceed with the best practices with regards to partitioning tables. Table partitioning is useful on a very large data table for primarily two reasons. The major reason for partitioning is to gain better management and control of large tables by partitioning them. To gain better management of large tables, you can rebuild and reorganize indexes by partition instead of having to rebuild on the entire large table. Another option available is also to use partitioned aligned index views in switching operations. As we've already seen, using a sliding window strategy for quickly bringing in new data and archiving old data can be beneficial and it can be quick. Additionally, you also need to be aware that SQL Server's query optimizer can use the partition elimination and parallelism to increase the performance of queries that run against the partition table. But to make use of the partition elimination, you need to ensure that indexes are aligned with the partition table and index views are partition aligned. You will also need to ensure that queries run against the partition tables have filtered based on the partition column. Since partitioning tables are more likely to be used with data warehouses, please ensure that you keep the join columns simple and explicit so as to take advantage of the bitmap filtering for star joins. And here I have the link to partition tables white paper, which you can refer to for details. And that ends this video presentation for partition tables. Please feel free to post your questions, feedback, and suggestions. Thank you everyone, and have a great day ahead.